Welcome to The Stare Down, sports talk and real estate, with Sean Carpenter of Coldwell Banker in Columbus, Ohio, Bill Risser of Fidelity National Title in Tampa, Florida, and Todd Meininger of Cummins, Georgia. Listen in as they discuss the week in sports and toss in a pinch of real estate too. Now your hosts, Sean, Todd and Bill.
Hey, greetings, everyone, and welcome back to The Stare Down, episode 66. It's the Mario Lemieux episode, episode 66. Can you believe it, guys? Bill, we've been on 66 episodes.
Unbelievable. Yeah, very, very hard to believe. This is the little conversation you had about, hey, we need a sports and real estate podcast, and here we are. Look at us.
And you know, it's basically just regular guys talking sports. And let's go to our third consultant over in Cumming, Georgia. Todd, how are you, man? You just got back from a long 8.5-hour drive. Why don't you fill in the listeners on where you were this weekend?
Well, unfortunately, the listeners cannot see my bronze golden burn that I have from being at the beach this weekend. Big family reunion down in Melbourne Beach, Florida. Fifth year in a row now. And at 6 years ago, the idea of a family reunion, I just would shake my head. My mom instigated this and made me come. And gosh, it's awesome seeing everyone I don't see very often. 5 years in a row now. So it's outstanding. Sean, I was more thinking you'd go Ray Nitschke episode 66 instead of Mario Lemieux, but we'll take it and run. But great to be here, Sean.
So Todd, family reunion, how many people were there? Give us an idea of the size. And I just want to go around Robin and see how big Bill and Trey's families are as well. So give me an idea of your immediate family and then kind of the spread out secondary family.
So I didn't take account, but I'm the youngest of six spouses, 17 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren, mom and dad, and my uncle. So got to be over 30, I would think, in there somewhere. 32, I think, I'm being told by,
that's cool,
by Kate. So, yeah, it was awesome.
Bill, how about you? How big's your family?
Let's see. There were 4 of us and 4 kids. And of the 4 kids, there's only 5 cousins, right? So when I was growing up, it was a little bigger than that. I mean, we had about 13 cousins floating around. So it's pretty big. But there's always the Risser family reunion up in Pennsylvania for anyone named Risser. There are hundreds of people that show up at this thing somewhere up in PA. I haven't gone yet, but I'm closer now, so who knows? Maybe I'll venture up that way to see who are all these crazy German dudes named Risser.
Quaker roots, Bill? Deep Quaker roots?
Sure. It's hard. I'm not sure. I know there's a German influence heavily, but the other side of my mom's side of the family is Welsh, more Welsh and British Isles stuff. So
that's awesome, Bill. So next time I'm in Pennsylvania, I'll look for the Risser exit.
Thank you.
That's awesome. I am one of 3 boys. I'm the middle of 3 boys. And Riley's actually our only daughter in the our only girl in the family. So my older brother had 3 boys. My younger brother had 2 boys. And I had the boy and the girl. So we have 7. But the Carpenter family, we've done the Carpenter family reunion twice. We did it once at Mackinac Island up in Michigan. And this is the Carpenters on my dad's side. And then we did it 2 years ago at the Broadmoor in Colorado. And my uncle arranges it, and my other uncle has a, you know, very deep line family tree of the Carpenter family back to about the 1600s, 1400s maybe, where they've traced back some families. So it's kind of cool. So let's maybe lead right into sports this week, and let's use the family tree. Venus Williams, Todd, I'm gonna turn it over to you and Bill because you're our tennis experts. Venus Williams makes it to her. Bill, you tell me, how many times has she been in the finals between her and her sister Serena?
Wow. Between the two of them?
Well, 17, 18?
Yeah, she's won.
Because they've been in the finals together, right? They played against each other in the finals, I think, twice.
Yeah. 1 million, I think, is the answer.
Yeah, it's pretty close. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah. So let's start on the women's side of the draw, Bill. Just give me your takes, and then we'll get Todd's, and we'll let Trey chime in.
Garbiñe Muguruza. That's my thoughts.
That's easy for you to say, Bill.
So, a good player, a powerful player, which makes sense. It'd be someone who was big and strong like Venus to beat her. I thought, 37-year-old Venus Williams would have been just a wonderful story. And I'm sure it was crushing for her and her team because that's probably – she's not going to be back there again. Right. That was the swan song. But, you know, it's always good to see someone, you know, kind of come out – not really come out of nowhere, but – you know, Muguruza's a talented young player, so good for her.
Didn't she win the 2016 French Open, Bill?
She did. She did. Yeah. So as a Spaniard, second major. Spaniards love the clay.
Second major.
Yeah. And so this is her second, yeah. So that's great.
Interesting. Todd, what was your take on the women's side? I mean, were you same as Bill?
Very similar. I'm not even going to try to pronounce her name. I get it. I butcher it every time. Muguruza, right? Does that sound right?
Is
that
Muguruza. Close enough? The Z is a TH in Spain. Come on. Olafable.
God. I'm just a pasty German boy, so I get confused. So she's kind of flown under the radar, right? I mean, I had to remind Bill that she won a major, and the only reason I knew that is because I heard it on the radio this morning.
Yeah.
So she's, you know, gosh, up and coming, two majors under her belt. Love to see Venus there. Surprised me that Venus had not won a major since 08. So it was a 9-year drought where she has had the opportunity to win it. And, you know, I saw her press conference briefly, and gosh, she said all the right things. I used to not be a big fan, but she seemed to say all the right things, like, hey, if I just get myself in position again, you know, if I get myself enough opportunities, maybe I can win, you know, one last one. And gosh, 10 years ago, I don't think, well, she was winning 10 years ago, but I think maybe she's a little more humble, a little more on the final holes of the back nine, if you want to use a golf analogy. But I was pleased to see her compete, and I was pleased to see Muguruza win the match.
Yeah, you know, Todd, what you just said is kind of a metaphor for all of our lives. You know, if we give ourselves enough chances, maybe we at least we're in the game, right? And you know, that's kind of what we all try and do every day in sales or whatever we're doing, is just have enough up at bats, right, to mm-hmm. to get a few hits. So let's turn to the men's side. I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's so impressive. The awesomeness of Roger Federer was on full display really the entire tournament. Bill, let me turn to you, because I'm sure Cindy and you watched a lot of that. I was on the golf course. Admittedly, I didn't see a single shot of the men because I was on the golf course. We had our club championship up here this weekend, 2-day event. Bill, give me your thoughts. Todd, as a tennis player yourself, give me your thoughts, and then we'll let Trey chime in.
Yeah, I definitely watched the entire match and saw something I'd never seen. Well, first of all, I think we called Federer. My wife did 2 weeks ago. She just felt like he was in a zone. She's not a big Federer fan, and what makes her most uncomfortable is when he looks just like things are in cruise control, and he's comfortable. When he's just comfortable, he's deadly. And so he had that whole feel this entire fortnight. And I think that today he was in total control. And it was really weird. I mean, Todd, and Trey, I'm sure we're going to talk about this. But to see what happened to Cilic today at the 3-11 the second, I've never seen that before. Where, I mean, it felt like an emotional breakdown, and I think it kind of was tied possibly to an injury. I think that might be a story to cover up that he just had this weird thing happen. But I've never seen somebody sobbing uncontrollably on a changeover, and to be just consoled by a doctor and a trainer and not examined. They just talked to him and calmed him down, and he got back out on the court. I think in hindsight, he said that, you know, his foot was bothering him, and he'd never resigned or retired from a match ever, right? So he was it was very interesting. But I don't think that had anything to do, to be quite honest, with what the end result was going to be. And that's, you know, the greatest male tennis player of all time. Oh, I said male. it's male. But it was, you know, for all the Federer fans out there, it was amazing to watch. 19 majors, not 8 at Wimbledon, which, you know, set records for all of that. I mean, everything he does now is a record. He's at that level.
So Todd, what was your take on Federer? I mean, I did he even lose a set? Did he run through the entire tournament without losing a set?
Mm-hmm. So that's pretty impressive, right? I was going to bring up 2 points initially. Not only did Roger Federer not lose a set, he was never down this whole tournament. He won in all 6 of his matches. He won. He was up one love. I'm sure he was tied, but he was never down at all, which is unbelievable. Just absolutely unbelievable. We talk about the emotions of sports all the time, right? And gosh, did we see it today? First of all, he claimed it was a blister, on his foot. But I think we'd all agree, you know, how many shots do we get at a major? How many shots do you get a chance at greatness? And I'm sure as competitive as he is, as prepared as he was out there with Roger Federer, I think something came over and was like, I cannot beat this guy today. And he put his heart and soul, probably months, years, decades of training. And I think, again, he's going to say a blister. And I commend him for never retiring. Joker retired the other day. Mm-hmm. Murray lost 6-1, 6-1 in the fourth and fifth set and limped off the court. And then, you know, all he talked about was his bum leg. I mean, tip your hat and say, I got beat today. You know, let the press bring up your injury or I don't know, but that's a different, I'm going down a rabbit hole. But greatest of all time, I agree with you, Bill. I think Chilik just had a, what did Oprah say, an aha moment or a what the F moment of, I'm not beating this guy today, and I may never be in the final court of a Wimbledon again. And the emotions of sports also. Do you see Federer afterwards? I mean, mm-hmm. he's head in the towel. Gosh, he's 35 years old. There are no signs. I think it was John McEnroe last week, or I'm sorry, before Wimbledon, said he may never win another major again. And after today's performance, he's like, I don't think he'll ever lose a major again. I mean, he just dominated this tournament, and your hat's off to him. Real quick, I'm going on and on, but he did skip the clay season. So he won the Australian, skipped the clay season. It's the luxury of being rich, and you can pick and choose your spots when you're old. But, hey, he's smart, and I think he has a great shot at the U.S. Open coming up.
Bill, talking about the not losing a set, I think the last person to do it was Borg, right? Is that mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1976.
You gotta go back. Yep. So 76. I mean, think about that for a second, and to go through and to not even stumble. I mean, like I'd be curious to know, did he even go 7-6 in any of them? I mean, was he even challenged? Because, you know, I just looked up 1901 Michigan Wolverines, finished the season 11-0, didn't even get scored on. 1901, 11-0, they outscored their opponents 550-0. And it's kind of that domination of, you know, cause part of tennis, Todd, I want to turn to you cause I sent you a text yesterday when I was watching. Part of tennis is offense, but a lot of tennis is almost just waiting out your opponent to make a mistake. Now, maybe at that level, it seems to me like Federer can go so much offense. Like he can turn that dial offense and just wait for the guys to make a mistake on his actions. Todd, talk us through that a little bit. The aggressiveness of when to sit back and when to go all out.
So Sean, real quick, I just flipped to the semifinal score and Federer beat Berdych. Is that correct, Bill? Berdych, yep. I think is his name.
Yep.
And it was 7-6, 7-6, 6-4. So he definitely got tested. Okay. I could do some research on the previous rounds, but again, to not lose a set or ever be behind is unbelievable. So Sean, we texted a little bit back and forth. I'm more of a doubles player, and you told me you were watching some of the doubles. I have played singles. It's been years. But, and Bill, yeah, I'm sure you and Cindy could jump in. They're really, if you want to label tennis players, there's someone you call a pusher who is just basically being a wall, a backboard, just getting the ball back, trying to get you to make a mistake. And then you have the aggressor, the servant volleyer, the guy who hits the real aggressive shots. I don't necessarily think that changes per opponent. And again, I'd like your opinion, Bill, but I think it's kind of the style you choose. So yes, there's some baseliners that will rally and just, it's a battle of attrition. Who's going to mess up first. But they're so good. They see the slightest crack and they bust through the door and go for the kill at this level.
So, yeah. I think Michael Chang, when I think about that backboard, right, that just hit everything back, just kept putting it back, and eventually drives his opponent to just go try to hit a winner, try to do something extraordinary to get to kind of end the point. And a lot of times that worked for Chang. I think that, but when you watch Federer, he you know, and it makes sense because if he is the greatest of all time, he does both well. He decides when he wants to turn one on versus the other. He had some, I mean, first of all, his service game, I don't remember him serving as well as I saw him serve at Wimbledon. I mean, he had some, you know, great, I mean, not just aces, but really high kick spin serves and all kinds of stuff going on that was really fun to watch. So he's the greatest of all time. We mentioned it.
Bill, do you see a big difference in his game from when he was coming up and winning his first couple? Do you see like a, a savviness? Do you see like a like he knows the like? I don't want to say like he knows the court like Larry Bird knew where to bounce the ball on the parquet floor at the Garden, but does he just know the game differently than he knew it at age 19?
It feels like that. It does. It, you know, but at Wimbledon, it's a special place for him, right? He's, you know, dominated there.
His confidence level just must be through
the roof. Yeah, it is. It's crazy. I think he really likes wearing the white outfit. I think that's what it's all about.
Well, and Sean, think of it this way. I alluded to it before. He does not have to grind anymore, right?
No.
He doesn't have to go. I mean, they're going to Montreal, Cincinnati, and then I think they go to Flushing Meadows.
Right.
And again, it's because I was driving 8.5 hours. I listen to a lot of sports. But he doesn't have to play in any of the warm-up tournaments that you want. They think he's going to skip Montreal and play Cincinnati and then go to Flushing Meadows. But again, I think, he loves and owns Wimbledon, obviously, but he skipped the clay season.
He's only won the French one time, I think. So he doesn't like the clay. I mean, Nadal's got 10. It was just that was
a bad time.
Yeah. But I think that you're right. He's the proverbial playing with house money, right? Mm. He's just having fun now. Whatever he wants to do, it's all about the family. It's all about having fun. There's no pressure.
And yeah, it's kind of like Arnold Palmer only won one British, you know? So it's just that, you know, pick your source.
Hey. If I had two twins under five, I would be playing every weekend if I was that guy. Did I say that? Do we edit that out, Bill? Sorry.
That's,
go ahead.
Speaking of doubles, though, Todd, I texted you, and I just want to take one second on this. I was sitting at the golf course after my round yesterday, and they had the Wimbledon on, and Venus had already lost, and they were showing the men's doubles final. Mm-hmm. Man, that is some different tennis than singles. Holy God, is that fast paced? And I mean, you get all four guys within like arm's length of the net, and the ball goes back and forth like 14 times, like ping pong. Todd, walk me through just the difference, because you play your primary doubles. So walk this stare down, listeners, kind of just through the primary differences. I know the serve's got to be in the same box, but then you told me the alleys are. Then all of a sudden, the whole court opens up, right?
Yeah, you're right, Sean. First of all, make no mistake, the tennis I play versus the tennis you're watching is just slightly different. We'll actually have a point where there's a good five or six volleys in a row, and after it's going, that was an actual doubles point you see on TV.
Yeah, I didn't see the beers in the screen that prior at your court. Yeah,
right. So, you hit on the head a little bit. I mean, instead of singles, it's two of you versus two of someone else, and the alleys are in play. A lot more strategy, especially the higher you go. If you notice, guys will stand in the middle and bend down and they have to serve over them. That's called Australian setup. And again, the lower you go, usually guys don't deal with that. But it's all reaction. It's all, you said ping pong, almost like, what's the arcade? Oh, pinball. It's almost pinball-y a little bit, you know?
Oh, yeah.
It gets boom, 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 back and forth. Fun, fast-paced. The mix is fun to watch. The Bryan brothers for years dominated men's doubles. I don't know if they're around anymore, but little-known fact, a 37-year-old Martina Hingis actually won in mixed doubles. I forget who her partner was, but a name that you haven't heard for in forever, she actually won a championship today in mixed doubles. So I thought that was pretty interesting. So,
wow. That's
pretty cool. You got to look back at Martina. She might have won a mixed doubles in her 40s at Wimbledon.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Martina, I think you're right.
Navratilova. I mean, not the –
Right.
Yeah, not Hingis. All right, guys, let's jump to baseball. Hey, Bill, let me ask you, the National League. Boy, Dodgers are on fire.
Nine in a row, and the D-backs lost five in a row, and the Rockies had their stumble a little earlier before the All-Star break. So, yeah, so the Dodgers are now up 10.5. All of a sudden, they're like the Nationals and Houston, and so I don't see anybody coming back to catch them. There's way too much money and way too much talent on that team. But I think it opened up the wild card a little bit for the Cubs or the Brewers, right? Because I really still feel like the Cubs catch the Brewers, and so with the Rockies falling back, all of a sudden wild card's back in play in the National League. We'd written that off a month ago, right?
Yeah.
They had a 10-game lead on the wild card. I think it's roughly five now. And you look at the Cubs coming out of the break, win three in a row. All of a sudden, it's like Madden flipped a switch. So it's going to be fun over the National. Yeah,
perfect timing to play the Orioles, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's perfect. Yeah. And then we got to mention, you know, Meiniger's Braves still in second place in the East. Not bad.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, so they're playing way above expectations.
They're poised to go on a little streak just to kill the trade deadline where they don't get rid of anybody and don't make any make a bad move.
And don't forget, just enough to just piss off the ticket office because they got to do a bunch of extra work for nothing.
They are poised to disappoint, Sean. As I'm guaranteed the Braves are poised to steal a line from our old friend Lee Corso. I almost interrupted Trey and said, "Not so fast, my friend. The Braves are 500, 9.5 back." And then I'm like, "No, they're not. This is Washington's division this year to absolutely run away with."
Yeah.
I can't seem to do anything. Don't sleep on the Cubs, right? Bill alluded to it. Don't sleep on the Cubs. I think they're going to make it interesting.
Yeah. Trey's right. It's all in or nothing. They've got to get home field advantage. So right now, every win is critical. The Dodgers on a tear. Bill, did you see that Bumgarner's back? Madison Bumgarner pitched yesterday.
I saw that because I picked him up in my fantasy league on a trade.
Oh, did you? Nice.
Yes, I did.
As well as
Zach Greinke and Jake Arrieta. I'm going all out. I just blew out my entire team, all my young talent, underpriced talent, because it's a keeper league to try and win this year.
So, Bill, I saw that Bumgarner pitched last night, like I said, or yesterday, struck out the side to start the game. His 13th time he struck out the side to start a game.
Yeah, I didn't get a win, though. He got no decision.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
Gave up two long balls. Yeah, two, you know, Jabari Blash and Mike Scherzer. Who? Yeah, they hit home runs off Bumgarner to blow the game.
Wow.
For me.
Wow.
I could care less about the Giants. I'm talking about me.
So, all the other things stay the same. I do want to circle back to the All-Star game. Kind of a boring game, but we kind of predicted it. All three of us picked Aaron Judge to win the home run derby. I'll tell you what, and Bill, you and I were kind of watching it all. Todd was jumping in. Trey, I don't know if you had a chance to watch it, but the way they set it up, I really enjoyed it. I don't know if I enjoyed it because Chris Berman wasn't there being annoying. The matchups were fun. Bill, what was your thoughts on the home run derby won by Aaron Judge?
Well, first of all, did you watch the softball game afterwards a little bit?
No.
There's a new annoying guy on the ESPN team for baseball. It's Adnan Virk. Every single call in the softball game was just over the top, through the roof thing. And so we just got to pray that Virk doesn't, you know, show up on more stuff. But look, Aaron Judge was a man amongst boys, it felt like. And you can hardly – how can you say that when Stanton's in this thing and Bohr? But – to be down 22 zip when he started his first battle or his first, you know, go around, and to handily win that, you know, he had to go the overtime, but he did it. And then I don't know how to explain this other than he hit what looked like were pop-ups to right. Every other person who hit one of those was just a pop-up to right, and they're seven rows deep.
I know, right?
Yeah,
you and I were texting his shanks were going 240 in the middle, you know? It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was it was great. It was fun to watch. He's definitely a special kid. And, you know, to have struggled so much early in his career with contact issues and all these other things, kudos to the Yankee, you know, minor league system for what they've done the last 2 years with him, because nobody saw this coming. Nobody. And here he is. So,
yeah. Todd, you want to jump in?
Yeah, Sean, I didn't watch much of the home run derby, but everything I read, you know, on social media, newspapers, whatever, they said the format's just, you know, leaps and bounds better than it used to be.
Yeah.
And I think that's the takeaway. I think the old format was maybe gotten stale. And you're telling me you didn't miss, you know, for the 900th time, back. Chris Berman saying that, or ball went to Plantation. You know,
even Ravitch did it one time, and it was annoying. You know,
a little tribute,
tip of the hat, yeah. And I'll tell you what, Mark Teixeira was on there with him, and Jessica Mendez, and I thought they added a nice, you know, I think Teixeira gave some good insights to what the player's thinking. He gave some good swings, and Jessica Mendez does a really good job of kind of analyzing the guy's swings.
I just went to I just call her Miss Supination Pronation. I mean, she could do that kind of stuff, right?
Yes, exactly.
It's all about arm angle, and yeah, she's very.
Where'd she come from? She's excellent, but weren't you like?
What's her best? She was a USA softball. Yeah. She
okay, I didn't know
gold
that.
Medal with Jenny Finch. Yeah.
Yeah. Was she an Arizona girl, Bill?
Finch? I don't know. Maybe no, she go to U of A.
I think Finch did for sure, but yeah. I'm not sure if Mendoza did as well. But
I don't know. Do you know anybody that came out of Tennessee other than Peyton Manning? I mean, why would I know who went to U of A?
Don DeVoe, Coach Gators. So any more baseball for any guys? Todd, Bill,
I'm just glad, Sean, that the AL won 2-1 and it has no effect on who hosts the World Series. I think that the team with the best record should get the home field advantage. I think this is the third show in a row I've mentioned that, so I'm gonna put it to rest.
All right, good. Hey, any thoughts on have you guys bought into the NBA Summer League at all? Or do you give two craps about it?
Are there crickets that we can
I would guess so because none of us watch the NBA regular season. We only watch it because we're sports fans when it gets to the playoffs. Boy, it just seems like it's just being shoved down our throats. And I don't know if it's because it's Lonzo Ball, or they're really just trying to get more people to know who some of these kids are that came out of college really early. But I would seriously rather paint my house than watch an NBA Summer League game.
Summer League. I think that it was a great draft class, right? A lot of really talented players came out. Maybe that's part of the reason, because it seems more this year than ever we're talking about it. But it could be the Lonzo Ball thing. It just takes one guy, right?
Yeah, maybe. Now, have you guys heard about the tournament? Is that on your radar at all? I see a bunch of shaking heads. So I just found out about it yesterday. I didn't know anything about it, but there's a basketball tournament called The Tournament, and it is a it's basically 5-on-5, right? It's not a 3-on-3 like Hooper tournament, but it's a 5-on-5. They're in the Sweet 16 right now. It's a $2 million winner take all, not street ball. It's not played on a playground. It's played in a gym. But it's basically teams of like, there's a Scarlet and Gray is one of the teams in the Sweet 16. So it's a Buckeye team, former Buckeyes, but like players that played in the NBA that are no longer playing. Scoony Penn is their coach. It's kind of cool. Aaron Kraft is their point guard.
Who started this league? There's one that Ice-T's out promoting. That's not his?
I think that's the one.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense then.
Because it's a $2 million. So what it is? It's a bunch of college players and former pro players that have come together. And you know, I don't know if there's a buy-in or if there's a, you know, if it's all sponsorship money. But it's interesting. I saw they just made the Sweet 16. Mm. So see where I think the finals are in Brooklyn. The Final Four is in Brooklyn. So we'll see. So. All right, guys, let's turn over to golf. I want to recap the two tournaments that ended today, the U.S. Women's Open and the John Deere. Bill, did you watch any golf this weekend, either the John Deere or the U.S. Women's Open?
I watched the I watched the back nine of the U.S. Women's Open. I watched the last five holes of the John Deere. And because my wife loves celebrities, we watched a whole bunch of the American Celebrity Challenge in Lake Tahoe.
Nice, the Edgewood course. Give me your what'd you see? What'd you think? What'd you like?
Well, I thought that the amateur Choi, is it her name, Choi? Yeah, she was fantastic to watch. Just one crazy wayward shot that got a little bit right on 16. Otherwise, there's a really good chance there was going to be a playoff at the Women's U.S. Open with an amateur trying to win. But Sun Young Kim, you know, the woman who won, 22 or 23 year old young woman who got her first major. You know, really impressive. I mean, hits the ball a mile. I mean, it's crazy how far some of these women are hitting the ball. And I feel bad a little bit for Fong, the woman out of China. I mean,
Shan, yeah.
Yeah, she had the lead after the first three rounds, a one stroke lead coming in today, and just really couldn't put it together, and then had a horrible, I don't know if you saw the end, Sean, but
I did.
She actually triple bogeyed 18.
I mean, oh, geez.
She needed to eagle it from the fairway and really went aggressively at the hole, which had her end up, you know, beyond the hole down, and she chunked a chip and then she three whacked it from there. It was just one of those finishes that was over. I want to tell you, if you have a chance just to see this one shot, go find Kim's chip on 18. So she's got a two shot lead, she can't afford to bogey the hole, right? That's not going to help because the birdie would tire. And she hit a beautiful, from a collection area, she hit a beautiful, I'm telling you, into the grain. So she knew she was going to dig that. There was going to be no, follow through. She was going to do a chip up onto an elevated green and just dig the club in. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Sure. Yeah.
And she hits it to perfection to a foot. On the other side of the pin is water. So think about how hard you have to hit that. If you hit it a little bit thin, it's wet and you lost the event.
Instead, and if you chunk it fat, it goes 2 feet.
It comes back down the hill to you.
Right.
And she hit it perfectly to a foot. It's one of the best golf shots you'll ever see. So,
wow.
Go check that one out if you get a chance. Find it online. It's amazing.
Pretty impressive. Yeah. I joked with Todd on a text. It was domination.
Oh.
And I used that word.
Top five from Korea. Because Fong triple bogeyed 18, top five Koreans.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, this is maybe just a shout out or an announcement to U.S. women's golf. They've got to figure out something because I guarantee you the ratings on this thing are going to be horrible.
Yeah, you're probably right.
It was tough to watch. I will say, boy, the course was absolutely immaculate. It was a Trump in Bedminster. I watched a little bit because I liked the Fox coverage, and I was able to watch on my laptop on Thursday, just like the U.S. Men's Open. But boy, they were making everything that front nine on Thursday because the greens were just – I mean, Bill, you saw the course, how immaculate it was. It really was impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, very, very, very cool setup. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, so but the Koreans really – I mean, hopefully some U.S. women can make a run and get the sport back up and where it needs to be. John Deere is always a fun tournament. Todd, you were driving, but you got the updates on it. Yeah, and Bill, you saw that Bryson DeChambeau wins his first tournament. Kind of comes from behind. He was only 3 groups from the leaders, but came from behind to actually go birdie to finish.
Yeah.
And then Patrick Rogers is in that class of Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas. He's an up and coming star that clearly will be in the winner's circle at some point in time. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah.
And you know, the weird thing, Bill, the interesting thing about Bryson DeChambeau, you know, like the one kind of quirk or idiosyncrasy about his game, every single club in his bag is the same length.
Same length. Exactly right. Yep.
Every single club. So from a 9-iron to a driver is the same length. And if you notice his stance, and I'm doing this on the TV or on our podcast, the guys, it is so upright that he has no bend, but there's no angle between his club and his forearms.
It's almost like, you remember the natural golf with Mo Howard, not Mo.
Yes.
Howard. That's his three students.
Mo Gravity, Norman. Gravity golf. Yes.
Mo Norman was a guy who was developmentally disabled. He autistic, I think, and really to a severe level. But Mo Norman, back in the – you have another name to look up. He used that natural golf swing that DeChambeau's got where the club and the arm are perfectly straight, and he could repeat it every time exactly. And he won a tournament. He won like a tournament in Canada. But because he was so socially awkward, he was ostracized and never really could play – again, he struggled with the PGA Tour. It just didn't work. But that natural golf, gravity golf, the all that tilt and whatever, a lot of that stuff goes back to a guy named Mo Norman, and really worth looking up on Wikipedia. Check him out.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a phenomenon. I think if he certainly wins again, I think you're going to see a lot more amateurs out trying a little more different things.
Yeah,
you know, there's always been that quirk when Sergio went to the claw grip and DeMarco went to the claw grip. You saw more people do that. The cross-handed putting. Bill, I mentioned to you on a text as DeChambeau was kind of winning it. Jim Furyk's really the last guy who just will not succumb to the pressure of changing his swing.
Right.
Even as ugly as it is. But here's the great thing about Furyk, and he's a great lesson for not only golfers, but really anyone in life. If you do something with consistency, it's going to come back, right? Jim Furyk's swing, Arnold Palmer's swing was not the best in golf, but the consistency of being able to hit the ball in the club face in the sweet spot is so important, right?
Yeah, I think if you freeze frame Arnold, Furyk, think of the other, Lee Trevino, all those guys that had the kind of quirky swings, at the moment of impact, you have no idea what they were doing before that. Because at that moment of impact, they are all looking the same. That belt buckle's facing the target. And, you know, they're releasing it perfectly at the bottom. Everything is always the same with those guys. And it, you can get there any way you want, I guess. Probably with our goofy swings, we never get to that impact point.
Todd.
So the thing about Furyk, and then I'll go back to the John Deere, a couple things popped in my head. But Furyk's the son of a PGA professional.
Right, I know.
So I mean,
Dad said, screw it, I'm done.
It's either one way or the other. He's like, I've told him 8 million times. He's doing his own way, and he starts to win a bunch of junior tournaments. He's probably like, oh, good. Yeah, so, and I think I mentioned before, I love that Scott's into lacrosse because I know nothing about it growing up. So I'm just like, hey, go play. Have a good time, right? I'm out. So John Deere, I was listening early on. Patrick Rogers had the lead, and he's the last to tee off. Shout out to our boy Steve Stricker, 50-something, just had a big day, right?
64.
And I think before Patrick Rogers teed off, he was no longer in the lead. And I was going to throw it to you and Bill. They were debating on PGA Tour radio whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. And I would lean that it's a good thing. I mean, it's time to go out and play around, and you can't just coast or, you know, par your way in, especially on that course. You got to make birdies and eagles, right, on that course. So
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the course, you know, it's set up that almost like Augusta National. If you're one stroke back going into 13, 13's a birdie hole, 15's a birdie hole, you know, 16's a possible birdie hole. So it gave him a number. It focused him. It wasn't just a walk in the park, I think is a good way to look at it. So yeah. The thing I really like about the John Deere tournament is what they do to keep their field relevant, right? They really there's a thing which I really like, which PGA Tour has done 3 tournaments into the British. If you're not already qualified, 3 weeks ago at Quicken, it was the top 5 not qualified. Then at Greenbrier last week, the top 5 not already qualified. And then this week, the top 4 not already qualified. And what John Deere does, and Bill, I don't know if you knew this or not, but John Deere, the way they get like the big names like Zach Johnson and stuff to go there is they charter a plane for the players, the family, and the caddies to get over to. So they just left Milwaukee probably, you know, an hour ago. And I'm sure it's just catered to the nines. I'm sure it's, you know, very well done, but that's how they get like the big names. Now I noticed Spieth wasn't there this year. He was there last year as a defending champ. And I'm sure he'll be back at some point in time, but,
That means a guy like DeChambeau had to show up. He had to bring his passport just in case.
Yes.
Right. Cause if you got to have your passport to get on that flight. Congratulations.
And look, I was going to bring that up, Bill, how painful it is for Patrick Rogers. Cause, either him or DeChambeau, a win today gets him into the British Open. Yeah, so Rogers came on 17 tee and he bogeyed 17 and didn't get it done on 18. And gosh, you know, I'm sure that second place check will comfort him a little bit, but I'm sure he wants to be over in England playing for the British Open.
And Augusta next year. So.
Oh, yeah. It goes on and on.
Who are some players that you're looking forward to really seeing have a chance this week at the British?
I'll go with every major so far this year. I won't change it. Ricky Fowler, obviously, I like to see him do well. Really curious to see how the team Mickelson does. You know, with the Tim on the bag, and they're going to have some fun over there. They had a great tweet today. I guess the weather was spectacular today in Royal Birkdale. So they said, "This is great weather. Just 7 more days, please. Thank you in advance. keep it like this."
Nice.
But the forecast is not for that. So that I look forward to my third thing I'm looking forward to is the weather. There's nothing better than a good blowing day with some rain. You know, that's what it's all about for the winner of the Open Championship. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Sergio's got a great chance based on what Trey just told me. The driver of the ball is going to be critical. He's one of the best drivers in the game. I think he's on his game. I think Zach Johnson is always a guy who just battles. I think Kuchar is a guy that could step up.
Is Zach Johnson the next Fred Funk?
Right. I mean, just
just put it in the middle and try and put it on the green.
Short
right?
hitter and does it. So, Todd, it looks like you're joining us on the phone. Any wild cards you want to throw out there?
Sean, I think Bill. I agree with Bill. I think it's Fowler's Fowler's Time. That was my pick all week going in. I'd forgotten that Bill, that's the horse Bill rides. But yeah, and you know, Zach Johnson had a great tournament coming in. Yeah, he could be, that's a good point by Sean. What about Dark Horse? What about, is it Stendon? Isn't he?
Henrik Stenson?
No, not that.
Oh, John Stendon.
John Stendon.
John Stendon, yeah.
John Stendon, yeah, yeah. Is that, I heard that name. I don't know if that's just a shot in the dark or if he has a good Lynx game to compete. But well, anyway, I like Ricky.
Good European player. And I think, you know, you obviously, at some point in time, you think Rory's going to break out of a funk. You know, you think Justin Rose has a chance, you know, being in front of the crowd. Who knows? Lee Westwood, you know, Darren Clark won it as an older guy. Boy, the crowd would certainly be behind a Lee Westwood at the in the final moments. And Bill, you might have just mentioned earlier, but John Rahm coming off a huge victory in the Irish Open has to come in there with a lot of confidence, right?
Yeah, go Devils.
Yeah. So,
hey, all right, Sean, do you know who won? Do you know who won the Scottish today? Do we know who won?
No,
I don't. I'm just throwing it out there.
When
Mickelson won his British Open, he won the Scottish, I believe, the week before. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe whoever won it's playing hot over there. So,
yeah, we always finish each week finding out what's going on with our host's week. Todd, back from family reunion, what do you got going on this week?
Sean, I will be applying a lot of aloe tomorrow. That's going to be job number one. No, you know, unfortunately, this is it for me for a long time. I've had a good run of some getaways. So obviously catch up Monday and going to travel and hit all my Atlanta clients this week. On a personal side, Sean, I was real quick. I'll just take a minute. But I was watching Daniel Negreanu, who's a poker star, and he has a video blog. And he talked about going into the World Series of Poker. Talking about intention. I intend to be doing this. So I quickly texted you and did a little research and discovered John C. Maxwell. And I bought his book, Intentional Living. And Bill, you'll be glad to know, 3 days later in the mail, I got 6 books from Sean on John C. Maxwell. So it's good to have a resource like Sean that can help you identify areas that you want to grow and be better, become better at. So I've got some reading to do on a personal level, and I'm going to get back to work tomorrow, hit the ground running, and hopefully make some sales this week.
Good, man. Well, John Maxwell is a great, he's a great speaker. He's a great author. And he's someone who obviously talks a lot about leadership and sales, and leadership is sales. And I know all 4 of us on this call are in both sales and leadership. So Bill, what do you got going on, man? Tell us about the Real Estate Sessions, the best real estate podcast on the airwaves. You're coming up on episode 99.4.
I am. I'm probably going to run through July with this recap. I'm having so much fun.
Yeah.
Producing people. I mean, your episode alone, right? We rebroadcast yours, another 450 downloads.
Wow.
So amazing. It's really, yeah. So I think because when I you were so kind to do it when it was a young fledgling podcast, that it's very fun to bring it back. And so this week, in honor of a change in her life, we're going to bring back Laura Monroe, also in the first 10 episodes, I believe. And so we're going to talk or bring her episode back from 2015. On a side note, Rafa Cabrera-Bello won the Scottish Open today. So that's a Spaniard that we
can look for.
Yeah, as well as Rom. And then this is our NAR Tech Edge week, Sean. So I've got Wednesday. I've got 2 presentations, top 10 things a new realtor should do, and podcasting for pennies at the T. Pepin Center in Tampa, Florida, nartechedge.com.
Hey, that'll be a blast. And so Bill come down and be the host?
Bill's our MC, so I'll say hi for
you. That'd be great. Yeah, tell Bill and all the other presenters I said hi, and it's a great event for the realtors in the area. So if you're listening to this on Monday or Tuesday, reach out to NAR or your local board and find out how you can get involved. So guys, for me, it's a fun week. I have I was asked by the North Carolina Association of Realtors to do a Facebook Live for them tomorrow. So on 1 o'clock, I'll be doing a little Facebook Live on how to use Facebook in business. On Thursday this week, I'll be chatting with the Sage Real Estate Group out of Toronto, Canada, doing a little webinar on building a better buyer. And then got a closing with my first listing. Folks are moving down to Sarasota. Couldn't be more happy for them. Just one of those dream listings, Bill, where it wasn't easy, but the seller did everything I or the other side asked him to do. And it just was a dream where he didn't question things. He was upset. He just wanted to know why things had to happen, but he did it, and he's going to have a successful closing. So that's on Wednesday. So really excited. So guys, good week. We, once again, not much going on in the sports world, but we seem to find time to fill. And I want to send a special thanks to Leesburg, to Trey for joining us. So on behalf of Todd and Bill, I'm Sean Carpenter. Thanks for listening to The Staredown.